live from the TateRecordsLLC.com studio. Right.
This is your new home.
One love, baby.
For classic hip-hop and R&B.
All day.
Blazing 98.5.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Lunchbox. It's your host, Mike. I hope everybody's having a fabulous day out there. Let's talk about the weather real quick. All right, we have 66 degrees outside, although it does feel like 68. All right, and tomorrow we have a high of 78 degrees. All right, loving this fall weather. All right, if you look at traffic, what can I say? Colorado Springs, y'all are looking really good out there. Stay safe. All right, I know you got someplace to go, but let's get there in one piece, not in 1.5 seconds. All right. Traffic is brought to you by Club Tilt and Grill, 3744 Alchazon Boulevard. And we had a couple of questions. And one of the questions is, I want to let you know that it's 11:03 in the a.m. on Friday, and we are live. That's right. This is absolutely live, folks. If you're wondering, well, is it pre-recorded? Is it live? It is actual live. All right. Now, if you ever want to be on the Lunchbox, by all means, send us an email at info@blazin985. That's info@blazin985, and let's get you on the Lunchbox. All right. But who is on the Lunchbox this afternoon? Well, we have Miss Paula right over here. Hi, Miss Paula. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, we have Jax here. Hi, Jax.
Hi, Mike.
All right, then. And these are the ladies from the Corral Bluffs Alliance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Now, what exact... COBA. Okay, now, I'm not sure who wants to answer this, but what exactly, Miss Jax, what exactly is COBA?
Well, COBA is a friends group for the Colorado Parks and Rec and Cultural Services Department. Our mission... And the reason we were founded was to preserve and protect as much of the Corral Bluffs and Jimmy Camp Creek formation as possible. We formed back in 2008. We're a 501c3 and actually registered. Paula's our treasurer and keeps up with the 990s and all of that good stuff. So we are the only way that you get to see this wonderful section of the Colorado Springs area is through our guided hikes.
Now, why did it need protecting?
Well, this is the one and only place on the globe where the paleontologists have found and cracked the code, essentially, of how the first million years of the globe recovering from one of its die-offs has happened. There have been five die-offs. The latest was 66.041 million years ago when the meteor hit the Yucatan. And immediately, within five minutes, everything, the fireball hit this section of the globe. All the dinosaurs died off, and then the mammals, our clan, became the dominant species, dominant clan for the globe. Oh. So knowing what happened and how the globe recovered from such a catastrophic event had never been studied anyplace.
Except...
Corral Bluffs.
How about that?
And
that is amazing.
Ian Tyler Leeson and Ian Miller are the two researchers from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science that made this discovery, along with 15 others. So there were 17 authors to their paleontological paper that was put out. There's a pop-up exhibit up at the Denver Museum if you want to see what's out there. It's geared to all ages. There's actually hands-on examples because they've got 3D printing and they can actually have you touch things. There's videos.
I love
that. If you would like to know more about it in these COVID times in your living room, look up Rise of the Mammals. There's about an hour-long
That's the
video.
PBS film, right?
That's a PBS special.
That's correct.
They came out to Corral Bluffs and they did some filming out there and it was really quite exciting. The same USGS people that had just done all the filming with their drones over that Hawaiian volcano that was erupting came out and set up at Corral Bluffs and did a lot of those shots.
Wow. Now, one of the things you just mentioned is that the only way for anybody to actually go and tour is through you nice ladies.
It's through our group, COBA.
Why is that?
Well, the area, we have Jimmy Camp Creek, which is 800 acres that the city has owned as a park, but has never been developed. since the savings and loan debacle back in the late 80s. And then we've got the Corral Bluffs open space, which is constantly growing every time we can add something to it. And they are basically, could be adjoined, but right now there are private owners that own some portions of it. In order for an open space and a park to be open, you have to do something called a master plan. And the master planning process is a rather expensive process. We're talking about $250,000 on up. And rather than doing one master plan for Jimmy Camp Creek Park and another for Corral Bluffs open space and then another for the segments that go between, the city park and rec is actually waiting until we have the complete adjoined area. And we're getting closer. The Corral Bluffs open space is about 1,100 square acres right now, and there's just a very small segment. But one of the other things that has to happen besides the adjoinment of these, so we have to have the researchers that have identified the areas that should or shouldn't be accessible. We don't want people coming out and filling their pockets with fossils from the area.
Oh, okay.
We also need to have Colorado Parks and Wildlife identify those areas that need to be protected. We have nesting golden eagles out there.
Oh.
There is a half-mile radius that has to be protected during their nesting season before they fledge. Correct me if I got the terms wrong on
that. No, you're doing good.
Paul is one of the volunteers from Colorado Parks and Wildlife.
Right.
As is Rose, the one that set up this whole thing about the Cool Science Project.
Well, thank you very much, Rose. And so you lead me to my next question, all right, then, which I think pretty much answers itself. But how does this coincide with the Cool Science Festival? How do they connect?
Do you want to talk about Rose?
Well, during Carnival Day, they're going to have a virtual talk with Ian and Tyler from the Museum of Denver Museum of Nature and Science. And because they are the ones that came out and made these discoveries at Corral Bluffs, we're trying to tie it in so that people can come out and kind of see the area, see what may be visible to, we can't take them to any of the dig sites, but we can show them the area that these finds are being discovered at and what kind of things the scientists are looking for.
Well, it sounds like a very unique area, all right? And would you be surprised if there's more stuff there that you haven't found yet?
Yes, and that's the reason it isn't open yet. That's why we take out guided hikes. That's the way that the Park and Rec likes to have people be able to have access. And we have now 4 hike leaders, so we're happy. We're all mothers. There's 2 that are volunteers with Colorado Parks and Wildlife, so they talk about the
nesting raptors.
The raptors and that sort of thing.
Wait a minute, raptors?
Eagles, owls.
Oh,
hawks,
oh,
falcons,
okay. I thought
hawks.
I'm thinking of velociraptors. I apologize.
Oh, no.
That's
what
I said.
Dinosaurs.
That's what I said. Raptors? Wait a minute now. Okay, so I apologize.
Good, we wish.
Yeah.
That'd really get the kids interested.
Yes, it really would. Yes, it would. And so when you take these guided tours, about how long does the tour last?
Traditionally, it's about 3.5 hours.
Oh.
We meet. Now, we can tailor it to whatever is necessary for the group. And we do have a contract with City Park and Rec and Cultural Services that we have to keep the groups together. So if somebody sprains their ankle, breaks a bone, or whatever, the whole group goes back. We're not going to continue. If they have lightning that starts hitting, the whole group goes back. If it starts raining, snowing, and the group's not prepared for that, then we're not going to be out there.
Well, that kind of sucks for the group, doesn't it?
Well, but they...
Well, some people in the group, at least.
Yeah, it does, but we try to go out as teams, as Paul and I are one of the teams that go out, and if we have to, we'll split and take whomever back, and she will continue or I'll continue with the group.
That's nice.
So we try to be as considerate as possible about that.
Now, I'm hearing about this, and I'm like, man, I would love to see these nesting places. I'd love to see a little bit of the dig site. How do I get involved? Who do I call? What do I do to go on to one of these things? Now, first of all, with COVID going on, how has that stopped? It's not as frequent or as often as smaller groups. What's going on there?
Well, we've got a website, corralbluffs.org, and they can go there, and there's actually a site they can click for hike request, and then they fill out the form, and you can pick any date you'd like. We have been restricted with COVID to smaller group sizes. We were doing like 25 to 30, but now with the guidelines that the city has given us, we're doing up to 10 people at a time. But we still try to have two hike leaders in case an accident does occur. But we're going out quite often. It used to be like once a month, and now we're probably going out twice a week at least.
Now, let me ask you this. If COVID wouldn't have hit and people really would have found out about what was found there, and when it hit mainstream, you think people would have, you think you just would have been flooded with, hey, I want to go on a tour. I want to see what, hey, I saw this on PBS. I need to go now. That type of thing?
In fact, I had people that were coming from Texas and New Mexico that were scheduling trips. And then when COVID hit, we had to lock it all down.
Right.
And there was a period of time there when we, from basically, was it March, April,
yeah,
until June, that we could take nobody out. So there was a big period of time where nobody was out there other than the people that live there. Now that we're able to take smaller groups out, and honestly, there was one year there where I was taking people out almost every day of the week. And I was telling Paula on the road, I think just a short while ago, I've taken people out every day of the year except for Christmas and Valentine's Day.
Wow.
I've had people come on 4th of July several times. I've been doing these hikes out there since 2007.
Okay.
And there have been people that want to see it before this major find occurred. And there's also interesting botany out there. And so the flora fauna is interesting. There's a lot of history, recent history. We don't have to go back millions of years to find out what, from 66 million to 65 million years, what happened. there was history going back to the early 1800s. And so we talk about some of that, the cattle drives and that type of thing, some of the early ranchers that were out there.
Now, did they ruin some things while they were out there? Because they didn't know. You know what I mean? They didn't know. And so did that mess up some things? Like, man, if they would have known and they would have preserved this, this would have been really cool.
No, probably not.
Probably not.
And there
okay.
were Native Americans out there that for years, centuries actually. So there's all that kind of evidence from a cultural services perspective that's of interest. Matt Mayberry, who runs the Pioneers Museum, has an entire collection of points that have been turned into him as having been found in Corral Bluffs.
Right, and now points are arrowheads, correct?
Right.
Okay. All right. But we just want to let the listeners know. All right. Are you ladies going to stick around?
Yes, we are.
Yes?
No, unless you kick us out.
No, I'm not kicking anybody out. This is a really good conversation. I feel it's really going to get better. All right, folks, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick little break, but we're going to be right back with the nice ladies from COBA. All right, we're having a really interesting conversation. Don't touch that dial. All right, then we shall return. This is Blazing 95. This is The Lunchbox with Mike.
This is your station.
I like this right here.
The People's Station. Monuments, Falcon, and Colorado Springs.
Here comes the heat, y'all.
The all-new Blazin'.
Feeling.
98.5.
And welcome back to The Lunchbox. Hope everybody's having a great afternoon over there. And remember, if you'd like to be a part of the Lunchbox, you're more than welcome to. Remember, we are live each and every day from 11 to noon with The Lunchbox, all right? And if you'd like to be a part of that, featuring yourself or your business, please give us an email at info@blazin985, all right? And that's B-L-A-Z-I-N, just to let you know. I know it's a little... it's blazing. What can you say? You having a good time, ladies?
Yes, we are.
Yes,
all
right. We're enjoying this,
right? And so, when they made the big discovery, all right, because, you know, it seems like there's something always going on over there at the Coral Bluffs, all right, but when they made the big discovery of when those two gentlemen came and they made the big discovery, you know what I'm trying to say?
Ian and Tyler.
Yes,
Ian and
yes.
Tyler at the okay. Denver Museum made the discovery of how they could figure out how the globe recovered from this die-off.
Right. Were you intrigued? Were you like, man, how come I didn't figure that out? That type of thing? Or were you like, whoa, that's here too?
No, actually, Kirk Johnson, Dr. Johnson, who is the director at the Smithsonian Museum, used to be the director at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. And I've only owned the property since 2002. He's been out there researching since before I owned the property in that area. And he makes a statement in that Rise of the Mammals, that PBS special you should watch, that before this discovery occurred, there would be people like himself that would spend their entire career looking for mammal fossils. And if they found something that was 1 inch by half an inch, they'd feel this was a major accomplishment. To find entire skulls and figure out how to get those extracted from these rocks is just phenomenal. And he was just flabbergasted, I think, that Ian had put this all together and they had been able to find the researchers, because extracting these fossils from the rocks is not an easy process.
No, especially when you don't want to break nothing. You know what I mean?
They have found this phenomenal individual that they feature in that PBS special that uses dental tools and is one of a kind in his extraction, being able to know where does the rock stop and where does the bone, which has turned to rock, where does it start? And it took them 18 months just to put together enough of these extracted fossils from this find before they published the paper. And it was a peer-reviewed paper in Science, so it is legitimate science recognized, and it shook up the entire paleontological world.
Wow. How about that?
And this
now,
is
it
in
being,
our area.
Exactly. So it being right there where you are, were you just, I mean, did you get to see the stuff first? Were you the, when they pulled it out, did you get to see it first? They're like, hey, yeah, you own something. Yeah, bye, lady. Yeah, move along. We'll show you when we're ready.
Well, when you look at it and you open a rock, you don't know exactly what it is unless you're one of these experts. So to us, the untrained scientific eyes, we would not have recognized it until they'd extracted it.
Okay.
So, no, we probably saw some of the stuff, but did we know what we were seeing? No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, of it is as small as a grain of pollen that they're finding. So,
say what?
Yeah.
That's how they knew what these mammals were eating.
And were able to do the timeline. They found things that were, dinosaur time, things that were after the die-off.
And all of that stuff got fossilized.
Yeah.
And they're extracting it, and they're figuring out, hey, be careful, because that's this. Well, how do you know? If you look at this, and we put it under the microscope, and yada, yada.
So you can imagine finding a grain of pollen. That's painstaking and a lot of work.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
It took the geologists to figure out the timeline and be able to track and say, hey, this is 100,000 years after, this is 200,000 years after the die-off, and so on and so forth for the first million year. And it took the botanists, the paleobotanists, to be able to look at these thousands and thousands of grains of fossilized pollen to know what these mammals were eating. Right after the die-off, the only thing that was really able to come back were the ferns. That's what the pollen was at that first time. So obviously the small mammals were only eating what was available. And as Paula's always explains, they had to be omnivores.
Had to be.
Talk about
they're good. Yeah, omnivores will eat anything. Dying flesh, plants, whatever they can find. They're kind of a scavenger, like what today's rats are probably considered.
Okay.
So they'll eat whatever they can get a hand on. And when it first came back is when, they just had the ferns and probably other animals that had died that were still laying around. So they couldn't be too picky, or they wouldn't have survived and grown, and we wouldn't be here today.
How about that? How about that? Okay. And you got to think that after that meteor hit, or asteroid hit.
Meteor hit.
All right. And all that dust went into the atmosphere and kind of covered it up and blocked out the sun.
Right.
Right. The only thing that might not have changed is maybe the stuff in the water, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah, because we are.
That was deep in the water?
Yeah, things that were. That and some bird life.
Okay.
For some reason, some of the birds survived and then some of the water life survived. We're talking crocodiles, alligators, turtles.
Right.
And then some small birds that were, for somehow, I haven't figured out where the planet got covered like it did, how the birds were able to survive it, but some of them did.
You got to, man, that is just mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Wow, how about that?
It is amazing.
And you're right there where it happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you're like right there. Hey, does that make it fun to go to work?
Oh, yeah.
We don't work. We volunteer and enjoy what we do.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
You know,
so you volunteer and enjoy.
If I had known I was going to have so much fun doing this, I'd have made that my career.
Oh, okay. All right. I'd have made that.
Because I don't ever not like going out there. I don't care if I'm one-on-one with somebody or if I've got a huge group. It's just always exciting because it's always changing. New things show up. The wind blowing, the rain coming through. It's changing all the time.
We have accommodated all sorts of groups over the years. I've had church groups. I've had garden club groups. I've had family reunions. I've had service clubs like Elks and Lions and that sort of group. I've had kids from, you know, school classes. We've had just friends that are hikers and hiking groups that come out. So we have had a lot of different types of people that we bring out. We've had some politicians, and some of them are just absolutely enamored with what they see, and others just sort of look at it, because this was a tropical rainforest environment millions of years ago.
Really?
Now, this is high desert now, as you know.
Yes.
So it looks like the plains, but we have several different groups or areas of plants, so depending upon which part of it in, you're in different terrain. And we have quite a number of different types of animals that live out there now that are of interest to people, too.
Now, you say that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the eagle?
Well, you mentioned seeing the eagle's nest. We're not allowed to show you by ordinance by federal ordinance, I think,
really?
Where the eagles are nesting.
Oh,
but
okay.
When they're flying around, which I see them almost every day.
You can point to them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I can point to them and say, that's a golden. And the goldens are the largest of the eagles that we have in the continental United States.
So how close of a look are you getting at these eagles?
How close am I getting?
Yeah.
Well,
you got to figure they're in the area and they're just right over there.
I mean,
do they look majestic?
Because it's called Corral Bluffs.
Right.
Because there's 400-foot elevation change from the bottom to the top of this Box Canyon. And my house sits atop and I look straight out at them. So they're not really far. If I'm leading one of the hike groups, then they're maybe half a mile away, or they sometimes just fly right overhead if you're lucky.
Yeah.
We never know what you're actually going to see.
No.
I mean, from day to day, I can take a hike group out and the next day take another group and they'll see something slightly different because it's
cool.
A constantly changing, evolving environment.
Now, how much does one of these tours cost?
Well, we ask for, we're all volunteers and we're a 501c3 and we have a website, we have insurance we have to pay to be able to do this. So we ask for a minimum donation of $5 a hiker. And
not bad at all. Not bad at all.
We're volunteering our time and that keeps us able to keep the website up and be able to continue to do this.
I like it. I like it a lot. All right, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we have to take another break. But when we come back, I want to talk about something that you might have seen out there that has just, I'm glad I woke up to see that today. All right, that's what I want to know about something that individually that you saw that you were like, wow, I don't believe I saw that. That was just, and you were just glad you just happened to be there that day to see it, okay?
All right,
you got, okay, so you have something I see. All right, then, so Paula has something already. Jax, you're like, you have a couple to pick from, huh? That's pretty cool. We'll be right back with the Lunchbox, but folks, don't miss out on this. This is going to be really good.
Here. I can't show you.
Blazing 98.5.
And you're back with Big Mike here on the Lunchbox. And my new friends, Paula and Jax from the Corral, Love Alliance. All right, real quick, folks, want to let you know the traffic is looking really good. You know, I keep being safe for lunch. We're at a high right now of 70 degrees, folks. All right, high tomorrow of 78. Traffic and weather brought to you by Club Tilt and Grill, 3744 Astrazon Boulevard. Now, ladies, before the break, I had a little task for you, if you will. All right, and I just wanted to know, what was one thing that you saw, all right, on the property over there at the Corral Bluffs, and you were like, man, I am really glad that I came here today to see that. I mean, something that was just wow. All right, now, Miss Paula, what was your wow that you were like, man, I'm so glad I was here to see that. That's amazing. That's what I want to know.
Well, there's been several. I mean, I know
More than one, huh?
We've been out with Anna Cordova from the City Parks Department walking around, and she's been able to point things out to us from the Native Americans that have been in the area, that it was like, wow, I never would have known that if I hadn't been here to see it. And if I were to go back there now and try to even look for these things, I'd never find them again. But it was her trained eye that pointed it out, and it was pretty exciting because I really am into the Native American stuff, and I like that she was able to point these things out and identify them to me. And then whenever we see like the prairie falcon or the golden eagle or any of the animals, we've got a lot of porcupines, and we just love it when we see these animals out there because they're kind of skittish, but if we happen to be just right and catch them, it just thrills me to death. I'm so excited, and I try to turn around and tell everybody, shush, shush.
Yeah.
By the time I do that, they've made enough noise that
they're already gone, huh?
But, I mean, it's exciting all the time. I have a tendency to trip and fall a lot because I'm looking around to see what I might see next.
Oh, okay. Well, that kind of makes sense. All right. All right, then, Miss Jax. All right, what's something that you went out there and, I mean, you thought it was going to be an ordinary day and you saw this and you were just thinking to yourself, man, I am so glad that I was here to see this.
There, like Paula, there's not just one thing.
Well, that's cool.
For instance, I was on a hike one day and Paula pointed out a wolf spider trap, which is a teeny tiny little woven trap that spider uses to get its food. I would not have recognized it nor known what it was, and now I'm seeing them all over the place.
Oh, okay.
Which is really great. Seeing an entire field of prickly pears all in bloom has been just phenomenal. Seeing the tail end of the bobcat as he's jumping out of my courtyard was kind of unnerving.
Wow, a bobcat, huh?
No, mountain lion.
Oh, mountain lion.
Did I say bobcat?
I thought you said bobcat.
I meant mountain lion.
Wow. I saw the bobcat on my deck, and I have a glass door that goes down, right. And my two little Bichons, these are 15-pound little white fluff balls, were on the inside wagging their tail like, Mommy, let me go play with this. And here's this cat that's about their size but a little bigger.
Would eat them. Yes.
Just outside.
Yeah.
They didn't understand when I explained you can't go out and play. I've watched the extraction of some of the fossils from that the Museum of Dendro Nature and Science has, which was just phenomenal when they helicopter out things. I don't know. Every day there's something new and different. Some days I wake up and there's a pronghorn, you know, what they used to call them antelope, that has made it down. My husband's always enamored every time he sees a group of deer come through. And my gosh, we've got a lot of those.
Do you grow a garden? Or you can't grow a garden because they eat all your stuff?
Well, I designed my retirement home so that I have a courtyard wall that they will not scale. And I have my raised beds in the field, and I planted things that they don't like. And I don't using chemicals, so I do everything organic. And I've been able to defeat them mostly.
She planted stuff that they don't like.
Yeah, I haven't found that yet. They eat my garden down to the nub.
Really? I found out that they have pumpkins, and I was kind of surprised. I was like, wow, they like pumpkins?
Oh, yeah, they'll devour pumpkins.
Oh, gosh, gourds are horribly good.
Or I guess so.
They even eat iris, and they're not supposed to do that. I've had good luck with the Apache plume. The saltbrush, or the four-winged saltbrush out there, they don't seem to eat, which is good, and that's native in that area. I like pointing out these plants, and I've even taken hikes out and explained to people what you could survive on and what these plants are good for, because the pioneers did use an awful lot of these things. That's what they had.
That's really cool to know.
Yeah, it is kind of fun.
Now, speaking of cool, once again, how does this all tie into the Cool Science Festival?
Well, we were contacted by Mark, and he asked us if we could lead out a bunch of hikes. So we have 8 hikes scheduled to take kids and their parents with us to show them the different areas, hopefully show them the different type of flora and fauna, and show them the different concretions and the tracks, because we can see the mountain lion track, we can see the porcupine or the raccoon tracks, so, and just kind of explain these things and tell them all about what's going on out there and how exciting it is for us.
and I hopefully inspire some of them to want to participate in some of the sciences.
Right.
I mean, there's an awful lot of science going on out there, whether it's the geology, the paleontology, the botany, on and on and on. There's a lot of stuff going on over there. And the subspecialties. Very. I always call it the ologists because there's just a bunch of researchers. And occasionally after they finish their day, they'll come up and I'll provide them snacks and drinks and we'll sit around and talk about what exciting things have been happening.
That is so cool. Now, do they have to get permission from you to start digging or looking or anything like that?
If it's on my property, yes. If it's on the city property, yes, from the city. Park and Rec and Cultural Services Department. And if it happens to be something related to people like the Native Americans, etc., you have to have a special license from the state archaeologist to be able to do that. And Anna Cordova of the city is the person that has that for the city.
Seems like you'll like Anna.
I love it. You
mentioned her a couple times now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, y'all get along real well with Anna, huh?
Oh, she is a wealth of information.
I guess I need to bring her on the show, too.
Oh, yeah. You should.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's
great. She could do an entire show talking about just barbed wire. Literally, that was...
Barbed wire?
Barbed wire.
Oh, yeah, barbed wire. It's
you know, amazing. she points out things that I never even knew existed. And it's just phenomenal to constantly be learning. And that's what I think both Paul and I love about this area. We're constantly learning about
it. Yeah, I learn something new every time I go out. I try to go out with all our different hike leaders that we have. There's five of us. And every time I go, I'm like, well, you hadn't mentioned that to me before. Because like the other day.
She seems like she had a little attitude about it. Like, hey, why wouldn't you tell me that? You know?
Well, the other day we were out there and one of our hike leaders said, oh, yeah, oh, by the way, we have a deposit from the last ice age. I'm like, well, why did you tell me that? Why? How come I'm not knowing these things? Because I get this
They have question. A deposit from the last ice age?
Yeah.
Here in Colorado?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, you did say we were tropical.
Well, that was 66 million years ago.
Oh, yeah. My bad.
Evidently got cold between then and now.
Yeah, then and now, yeah.
Yeah,
might have snowed once or twice.
A few times. And then there was the inland sea, and you know, there's a lot of things. The Rocky Mountains rose up. They were flat at that point.
And we have volcanic deposits out there.
So how is it to volunteer someplace where it seems like it's just a hotbed of all these different things that happen? I mean, whether it was, you know, 60 million ago, million years ago, 80 million years ago, 200 million years ago, 1800s.
The last 100 years, you know, or 150, we had the Goodnight Loving Trail come through with their cattle drives. We had Fort Carson using the area as a shooting range. There's just a font of history there in remarkable amount of findings that, I mean, we can walk around and pick up 50 caliber bullets from Fort Carson.
Well, I was going to say, if Fort Carson was used as a training ground, they definitely jacked some stuff up.
They definitely jacked some stuff up.
But, and in fact, I actually had one of Sharon that came out who works for the Army, I think. And she has she's one of those environmental reclamationist persons, and she has an order to clean up this area. But of course, now that the city owns it, they want everything to stay as is. You realize we're a Colorado natural area? We got that designation after, it took us about 7 years to get that designation for Corral Bluffs Open Space. We want to keep things as they are, and we want to constantly learn new things. We're never bored. That's what it's like to be out there. It's never boring.
Yeah,
how about
it's
that?
Not. It's
never
not.
Boring. Do you live out there as well?
I do. I live about a mile north of there. I live up on top, but I get to see the eagles regularly. And
you get to see your friend?
I get to see my friend all the time, yes.
Right.
Yeah, we have a blast. Go over there and go to her house and watch the eagles. That'll ruin the entire meeting.
Really?
Yeah.
That'll just ruin the entire meeting.
If we have one of our board meetings there and the eagles are flying, I can't bring them back to business.
Yeah.
Someone's like, hey, hold on a second. Look at that.
Yeah.
Ooh, wait a minute. There's three of them. Look. Then you're like.
Yeah, we have to schedule another one.
Yeah, then you're rubbing your head. Well, that's it for that meeting. Okay, who wants a cold drink? All right, then I got some sandwiches over here.
Yeah.
You know?
That's about it.
Have you named the eagles?
No.
No?
Surprisingly, no. We haven't.
stuff?
You know what? We've named almost everything else out there. We want to lead the hikes, and we want to be able to communicate among ourselves.
Right.
In a city, of course, since they haven't master planned, it hasn't named things. So we've come up with our own names. I have this new idea. I think we need to put one of our maps together on scarves. You know how they print maps on scarves with
okay.
our names of the area?
Yeah.
I think that topo with that area would be fun.
That would be a good idea.
Innovation or my thought that woke me up at 3 o'clock this morning.
I like that. You charge people $20 for it. There we go.
There we go.
That pays for the website for the year.
You can have the hike for free, but we'll need a $20 donation for the scarf.
There it is. There it is. I like that. Ladies, you are a lot of fun.
Well, we enjoy too.
You are a lot of fun. Now, once again, tell everybody how they can go on one of these phenomenal tours.
They can go to our website, www.corral, that's C-O-R-R-A-L, bluffs.org, and there is a button on there that says request a hike, and it fill out the form, and they can pick any date they like to. We are available 365 days a year.
So that means in any weather, they could go on a hike.
Well,
so you've done hikes in snow then.
I've done hikes in snow.
Yeah.
I prefer not, because we're hiking up creek beds. And
safety is our first concern.
Primary. And so we try not to take anybody out when it's precipitating.
But you got to think, when it was like 90 degrees outside last summer, that should have been the perfect time. Really?
Because it's in a canyon, and it's at least 10 to 15 degrees warmer in this canyon than it is, like, what they're telling you it is at Colorado Springs.
Okay.
Like, right now, you just said it was 70. It's probably closer to 85 out there. So we have to be cautious because of heat exhaustion and heat stroke.
See, we learn something new every day.
We also have to worry about the opposite. If we're doing, I've done full moon hikes in the December, January.
Really? At night?
And so you have to worry about frostbite, and you have to make sure that everybody is well equipped. You were talking about having to wear hiking boots, having to have long pants.
Yes.
It's mandatory. There's enough hazards out there that you need that to protect your skin. A yucca can go through a sidewall of a tire. It'll go through your skin without a problem.
And a yucca is?
It's a plant.
It's really a
spiky plant, the one that has the little flower stalk that comes
out. And you say it'll go through a tire like it's nothing.
Yeah.
In fact,
excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, they looked at me like I was dumb, and that's okay. I already think, because I'm very ignorant to the fact, and I have no problem saying that to you. All right, but they're like, well, yeah, it'll go through a tire. What's wrong with you? You don't know nothing? No, I don't know nothing.
Well, if you take one of the leaves of that and you cut it off and you pound off all of the green, you leave the pointy end, you have a needle and thread that could go through rawhide.
Wow.
So
now we know how people were sewing things.
In fact, when I took a charter school group out, that was one of the show and tells that I did so that they would have a chance to figure out how to use it.
Wow. Absolutely amazing. Wow, and nothing but great smiles in this room right here, folks. That is something else, all right? So go to the website, schedule yourself a tour, all right? And right now, because of the way COVID is, you're just doing 10 people tours. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, can you request who you want to do the tour with? Can I say, hey, I want Paula and Jax to do my tour?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, we can do that?
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, okay. All right, because that just sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, I want to point out that we have three other hike leaders that are extraordinary.
They're
all mothers.
Oh, yeah.
That we have one that is another one that is the Denver or what is it?
Colorado Parks and Wildlife.
Parks and Wildlife volunteer, a retired school teacher. We have one that is a rancher out in that area. Also has done a lot of volunteer work. Knows a lot of history. Has worked with Pioneers Museum, so she knows an awful lot out there. And we have one that is a Denver Museum Nature and Science researcher.
Oh, okay.
Also a retired school teacher.
All right, so you're not just letting anybody take you on these tours. You have some really very qualified volunteers giving these tours and making sure people see things and learn things and have fun all at the same time.
Yes.
All right, now, is there an age restriction on these tours?
On Cool Science, we are asking that they be 10 or older to come out on our hikes.
Right.
But in the past, I have taken family groups out where the father has a backpack on and there's a newborn.
Along.
I've had kids come along that are able to hike, they have to have an attention span that keeps us together as a group. But if we have a one-to-one, one parent to one child type ratio, that works out really well. So, and I've had my Red Hat group, which are older ladies in their 60s, 70s, and 80s come out and hike. So no, there's not really an age limit, but for cool science, there is.
Cool science, there is, all right. All right, I guess we hit this, but I just want to talk about it again, all right? So you're doing the tour. You see any wild animals?
All the time.
Oh, constantly. That's the pronghorn, the deer, the raccoons.
What about the mountain lions and the bobcats?
Well,
they're very elusive. They're nocturnal.
Oh, they're nocturnal. So when you do your moonlight tours, do you see them?
No, because in the winter.
They probably see us.
Oh, they probably see you. I'm like, yeah, I ain't going over there. that type of thing.
It's really rare to see some nocturnal animals. They're very skittish. Uh-huh. I remember one night coming home and driving down my driveway, and there was a porcupine that was sort of meandering, that kind of lumber along across the drive, and we had to dim the headlights so that he wouldn't run off immediately, just so we got to observe him, because nocturnal animals are really skittish of people, and there is a reason.
Right. So any bats over there then?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
She said, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they eat the insects, right?
Five different types of bats. They're also pollinators.
Okay. All right, bees?
Yep.
Yes. In fact, have you ever seen one of those bee type of hives where you've got the yellow pollen wax that comes down from the cliff?
Only in pictures.
Oh, we see those occasionally.
We've had those out there.
Yeah.
Big ones.
Big.
The big ones. You ever extract the honey?
No.
No,
you leave it alone.
We leave it alone. We tell everybody that everything out there is a leave it right. Leave it right where it is.
Okay, leave it right. Yeah, leave it right where it is.
There's a
reason. I think I'm going to start using that for my kids. Leave it right. Leave it right. What? Right? Right where it is.
There, yeah.
Might have to do that. Ladies, thank you very much for joining us today. I've had a really great time. If you ever want to come back, please come back, all right? Before we leave, please tell everybody how they can get in touch with you one more time, please.
www.corralbluffs, that's with two R's, C-O-R-R-A-L, bluffs.org.
All right, and schedule yourself a tour. And something tells me, folks, when you go on this tour, you're going to be a lot happier than, you were excited to go, but when you leave, you might be disappointed, but still excited. You're like, oh, it's over? Ah.
Right.
Yeah, because you said it's 3 hours, but does it feel like it's 3 hours?
Not usually.
And
it is every season I tell you, you need to come back and see something different. The winter is just a gorgeous landscape with the colors of the dried grasses and that type of thing, and some of the wildlife that you see. The spring, when everything starts waking up, is a different set of colors and a really interesting time to see it with the runoff from some of the spring rains. The summer, when we have the wildflowers. The fall, when we're seeing everything start to change. So if you see it once, you haven't seen it until you've seen it year-round. Come back.
Thank you very much, ladies. Y'all have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
We want to thank you for joining us today here on The Lunchbox. Y'all have a great afternoon as well. We'll see you on Monday.
Blaze one for the nation.